Kia ora, tēnā koutou, nō mai, haere mai. Hello everyone, welcome to the Walk in the Shadowlands podcast. Join me as we take a walk into the realms of the unexplained, of the paranormal, of things that go bump in the night and haunt your dreams.
Your hosts,
I'm Marianne. Thanks so much for joining me today, tonight, whatever time it is, wherever you live in this beautiful world of ours. Sit back and relax. Let me be your guide as we walk into the Shadowlands together and see what awaits us there. Hi everyone, today's episode's a little bit shorter than my normal ones, but if you're into cryptozoology and cryptids, particularly stories of Bigfoot, Sasquatch, the Moyho Man, the Yowie, or any of the other hundreds of names that this creature goes by throughout the world, then be sure and stay for this week's riveting episode. Imagine this if you will. Our guest's first encounter with this elusive cryptid begins when Mum's driving her then young son home. They live out in rural East Texas, and there's little traffic and much untamed land still around them. Coming up on the top of a hill, they spot this creature on the side of the road, and are left both shocked and a little scared by their encounter, not to mention shaken. Fast forward some years later, and they've moved into a new home, still a very rural home. No need for curtains on windows where they live. The closest house to theirs is a matter of miles away. When, after a period where the mother is very uneasy and uncomfortable, feeling as though she's being watched all the time, things, small at first, begin to happen around their home. This soon escalates into physical sightings and interactions over an extended period of time with one of these beings. Now, for those out there who've heard of the famous talk show radio host, the legendary Art Bell, may recall having heard these folks on his show. They were guests on his show for a couple of episodes over the years, and I actually recall hearing parts of one of my guests' interviews with Mr. Bell. So I was absolutely thrilled when I found them, and they agreed to come and share some of their experiences with us. The question as always is, are you willing to walk into this part of the Shadowlands with our guests and see what awaits us there? Then let's begin. My guests today are mother and son, Emily and Sierra Nesvedomi. Emily is an artist and a musician of over 40 years. She's travelled the world and lived in Hawaii for some time before moving back to East Texas. Sierra, aged 44, is also a world traveller. He attended the University of Hawaii in Hilo and has a great interest in import cars and history. Both currently live in Trinidad, Colorado. But before we begin this week's episode, if you follow and enjoy my content, then please consider becoming a supporter of our podcast and helping me with the running costs of keeping this on the air. You can buy me a coffee at www.buymeacoffee.com/walkingtheshadowlands or become a monthly supporter. Any help, big or small, to keep our podcast up and running is appreciated. Now, on with the show. I'd like to introduce my guests, Emily and Sierra Nesvedomi.
Thank you.
today I have some very special guests, Emily and Sierra Nesmadomi. First of all, before we even start, thank you, really, thank you for agreeing to talk with us about this. And I know it's late there, and I really appreciate the fact that you were staying up to talk to me and my listeners. I really appreciate that.
Sure. I came to New Zealand in 1998. Wow.
Oh, really?
North and South Island. Learned a little bit about Australia too, but you know, learned a little bit. It was really, really fantastic. Great.
Now, maybe we could start at the very beginning, Emily. Could you tell us a little bit about where you live? You don't have to give any details. Just generally where you live, how long you were at this particular place before these experiences started for you.
Okay, well, basically it started when Sierra was a little boy in first grade. And we weren't aware of any paranormal or, you know, Bigfoot issues at that time. And I went to pick him up at school. We were going home and we turned off the main highway onto a dirt road that we travel quite often in the country down in East Texas in Russ County, north of Nacogdoches, Highway 50. Anyway, we pulled off the road and we topped the first hill and Sierra was standing in the seat and we saw this creature and he jumped across the fence. It was a brand new fence. It was a tall fence, probably over 5 foot high. And he leaped over it and ran across the road, jumped over another fence. And by the time we got there, he had disappeared. Oh. And it must have scared me because we didn't stop to look for a footprint. But the strange thing about that one was he had on a shirt. He was tall and lanky. It was a Bigfoot. And he was brown colored. And so we just kept on going and we got home. And from then on, little things started happening from time to time. It wasn't a nightly thing because I wasn't involved so much with it. We were just kind of, it was our first experiences with the Bigfoot.
Right.
And then we started discussing it with neighbors and stuff. And it just gradually got more and more involved. And then we went to Hawaii. And then when we came back from Hawaii 10 years later, we moved to a town down the road about 8 miles. And that's when the one that lasted for 10 years and he visited us every night.
Okay, maybe we could backtrack a little bit. Can you tell us about this property that you lived on? Was it wooded? Was there heavy woods around your property?
On the property, the one we had for 10 years,
that one?
Okay. It was surrounded by woods. We bought an old house. It was a wooden house. It was surrounded and there was country roads. It was a real rural area. And at that time, there weren't any close neighbors. They were probably 200 yards away from us, the closest one.
Right. So it was fairly isolated and easy for this creature to come and go.
Yeah, he did. He was there when we moved there. We moved back from Hawaii in 06. And we were there about 6 months. And I had been feeling funny all during the time we were there. And when we first moved there, I was scared a lot. And I didn't know why. And I always felt like there was somebody watching me. And I thought, why would they be watching me? This is in the dark in the woods. People aren't going to walk around without a light.
Right.
They'll fall down, you know.
It's really, really nobody freaked out.
And right. So the way the first encounter happened, I had rabbits. I was raising lionhead rabbits, and they were in the barn. And I was still in my Hawaiian mode, you might say. I was running around all night. It was hot down there, and I wore short shorts, and I'd go up to the barn. And one morning, I woke up, and the rabbit were in chaos. There were several of them out of their cage. And I thought, well, that's weird. And so that night, actually the afternoon, Sierra went to town and he bought a million powered candle spotlight so we could see because we didn't have any good flashlight. So we were sitting in the living room watching TV and something hit the house and it shook the house. It boom, you know. So he grabs the flashlight and we go running out the back door, and we had a German Shepherd. And so Sierra said, well, I'm going to go to the front to see about my truck. I said, okay. So I went in, it was dark. It was about 11 o'clock at night. And I was leaning up against my pickup, looking towards the north, just, you know, not doing anything really, not looking for anything because we shined the light. We didn't see anything. But then suddenly out of the grass, and the grass was probably 3 feet tall or so, this creature just rises up in front of me and just keeps rising higher and higher. And I'm going, oh my God, that's all I could say, you know. I was in shock because this was my first time to have a close encounter.
Right.
With a Bigfoot, and he was huge, and he was a white one. I don't know if he was snow white, but he was light colored because there was a full moon, and the moon was shining on him, and I could see him very plainly, and he was only about 10 or 15 feet away from me.
Well, that's not too long.
He stood there and just looked at me, and I just stood there and looked at him. I was too scared to scream or run or holler or do anything. I was just saying, oh my God.
God.
And a few seconds later, he just turned and sprinted away, and the horses in the neighbor's field started running and yipping, and dogs was barking. And that was the beginning of the nightly affair. I started feeding him. The next night, I put out some bowls of food, and I put some vegetables. I put a meat casserole, and I put some lemon pie, and he took the lemon pie.
Oh, that's interesting. So how old were you at this stage, Sierra?
Oh, it was about 10 years ago. So I was in my 30s, 35. But it was about, like, they happened from 08 to 2016.
Because that was time.
Continuously, yeah. Different things every night with something going on.
He always bothered us, and he always left his calling card. Yeah. At night, and he would leave a scat in my walkway or in my driveway every single morning. I'd go out and there'd be a new scat.
Right.
No word.
Yeah, yes. What made you decide to leave food out for them?
Because I was curious, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. I saw him and I wanted to. I don't know. I'm an animal person. In a lot of ways, and I've had coyotes and all kinds of wild animals, and right now I've got some raccoons, but back then I just had the Bigfoot and a German Shepherd, and yeah, he would come every night, and it was just, we could always tell when he was close by, because the German Shepherd would lay down by the front door and just breathe real deep and snort and just lay there, and I knew he was out there. And some nights he would chatter and make this kind of a bird sound to try to talk to me. And I never got up enough courage. I'd get right up to the door and ready to open it because I knew he was there at the end of the porch. And I couldn't do it, even though I didn't think he would hurt me. He could have hurt me.
Yeah.
10 years he could have hurt me, but he didn't. But I did put covers over all the windows, and even I had to put plywood on some of the windows.
Well, remember the pie trays? You leave the pie trays out, and then you could tell by the scratches that it wasn't a raccoon, it wasn't a dog, or anything. It was human hands or not human, you know, fingernails. Remember that?
Yeah.
The trays.
There
was claw marks on the air conditioner.
By the windows, there'd be big footprints every morning. You could see where he'd sit, come and sit in grass at night, and it'd be a big, round, flat, sometimes dead spot where he had sat on the grass. But after I came to realize, and I had studied him all those years, and finally I just gave up because I was pretty much bored with it. I mean, I knew he was out there, and I used to save his scats and do all kinds of interesting things involving the Bigfoot scene. And people wanted to buy the scats, and I knew they were his.
Yeah.
I could always tell because I knew how they were. And they weren't bad. It wasn't like he had diarrhea or anything, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lady down there in East Texas. Her name was Ketchum, Dr. Ketchum. And she was trying to develop a DNA test. Or Bigfoot, and I don't know how that's going now, but anyway, that was his calling card.
So, did you leave food out every night?
Usually, yeah.
And did he?
I knew he was having a hard time, you know.
Oh,
all animals have hard time.
Yeah. It's actually really lovely. And so did he ever bring you any little gifts in exchange, apart from his cat?
I don't remember much.
If he did, we never found him or seen him, so much grass everywhere.
Right.
He liked to play tricks, you know. He would move things that a human being couldn't pick up and move, like giant logs, and leave the doors. We didn't lock our cars back there then because we lived in the country. And
right.
There would be a door open, and one night he took a Dr. Pepper out of the car.
That's what was curious. Somebody opened the door, it was a four-door span. They opened the back door and left the door open, just not. But there was a drink that was taken out of the six-pack. And no one would have been taking a drink. No one would get around. Kind of weird there. That was one experience, horror-related.
So he's obviously very intelligent.
Yeah.
Very
He knew when there were people there besides us, and he knew when I was there alone. One night, I was laying in my bed, and my bedroom was across from the living room where there were windows in the living room. And I heard this tap, tap, tap with these claws on the glass windows. Yeah. And I called Sierra. He was over at his friend's house. Yeah. I said, I think you better come home.
Right, man.
Like I said, he could have heard us, and he didn't.
And he would scream, you know, in the woods every night, same time. And I was over at friend's house. It was about a mile away. And we would be out in the yard, and we would hear the screaming going on at my house. And he'd be like, I hear your friend. And I'm like, well, I guess you better go home, you know, and I'd get in the car and go back over to the house because the monsters would be screaming in the woods. And it was like that every night.
Wow. And you did send me a recording, which is really awesome. And I will edit it into our conversation here.
Those are two main ones. There's the hound dog barking, and then immediately after that, you hear big scream, short click. Another one of a quacking.
Yeah.
He made all kinds of sounds. He would imitate animals and stuff. The one sound you got with the dog, that was a bloodhound. His name was Gunther. And that particular night, he kept barking. And bloodhounds, they kind of like, you know, that barking thing. And so all night barking, running around the yard. And I'd go out, try to get him to come in. And I'd get close to him, he'd run off all night. So about, you know, midnight, I guess about 11, 10:30, 11, maybe around that time. But anyway, I went out on the front porch. I turned on the front porch light, and I went out on the step there. And Gunther was on the sidewalk in front of me, and Gunther, what's wrong with you? What is it? And he took his old head, and he flung his ears around, and he looked towards the west, and there was a driveway over there about, I'll say, 50 feet from the house, 40 feet, something like that. And there the Bigfoot stood, and he had a son with him, and the smaller one looked like maybe a teenager. He looked like he was maybe 5'6", 5'5". And the Bigfoot was, oh gosh, he was really tall. He was like 9 tall and 3 feet wide. And they just stood there still as could be. And the light shined on them. And I looked from the porch light, it was a reflection. And they were real still. They didn't move. And I said, okay, Gunther, you can come in the house now. And Gunther come in the house and laid down. But that's when he was, that one of him barking and then the Bigfoot making noise. It's kind of a scary sound.
Okay, for my listeners, I'm going to edit the sound in here now. So that was the sound that you both captured. It was very interesting, and it seems to go on for quite a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. There's quite a scene there.
Yeah, and I can always, you know, close more recordings because I have a lot of different sounds, but it's always the same kind of crazy little sounds, the screaming or the quacking.
Some questions. Do you feel, either of you feel, that perhaps this... Did you give him a name? You gave him a name, didn't you?
Biggie.
The goop. Do you think that he ever communicated with you, like, telepathically?
Yes, he did.
Did I?
Actually, the first night, no, the second night after the first encounter, he sent me a message, and it was really hard to explain and hard to even put into words, but he liked me, and he had a lot of feeling for me, and I could just feel what he was feeling. That's why I never really felt threatened, but he did have a sort of anger problems where he didn't get violent. He just screamed a lot and hollered. And the dead of the night, you know, you could hear him maybe 100 yards away just screaming so loud, you know, you want to run in the house and hide. And people down there, it's so hot and humid, they have air conditioners, and most everybody lives indoors, you know, watching TV. So they're not going to be out there looking, and they don't even want to talk about it down there.
That was going to be my next question. Like, obviously, if you experienced, your neighbors must have had some sort of experience as well.
Yeah, but they didn't want to talk about it. This one neighbor moved in, and they were, I guess, about 50 yards from us. And she was out one morning in the garden. I went over there, I tried to tell her about it. And she said, you know, I came out this morning and something was growling at me. And I thought, well, that's him. And he growls and barks and yaps and screams.
The only person who talked about it, like, a little bit, my old neighbors that were in the next town down that we lived in years ago, and they still had running, they had a boat in their yard or a trailer, and the boat got spun around one morning in the yard. Nobody would do that, and they were too, her dad was too disabled to be able to do anything like that. Things like that, screams in the woods. She was watching her History Channel special and something like that, and they had a Bigfoot on there, and it screamed. And when it screamed, one outside her window in the woods screamed right through her bedroom window. She told me about that. It was a plastic window.
Wow.
So you're right through it.
Now that's the Bigfoot that ran across the road that had
that
the
was
shirt
brown,
on. That
was a brown one.
I wonder why it had a shirt.
I don't know.
Kurt.
I've heard other people talk about it, and they've seen him wearing a shirt. It was a blue flannel shirt. He probably got it off of somebody's side.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Yeah.
They quit talking about it. Like, I moved back. Tell me a couple things. She was going along the road, and it ran out, something hit her car, hit the back end of her car when she was going down the road. And she stopped, and the scene got out and looked, and there was hair in a dent, but she didn't mess with it. She went on home, but that was the last thing she ever told me. Miles away.
Oh, wow.
That Bigfoot that ran across the road one day, I tried to go up to the church on the hill and tell our neighbors about it, and he said, oh, that wasn't anything like that. That was probably a field worker that lives down there in one of those deserted houses. Well, no, that's not what it was. But the next week, he came over to the house and he said, Emily, I just found my dog, and it was like pulled apart, like unhuman, like, you know, and Bigfoot does that. He hates dogs.
Yeah.
And we've seen a pig one time that went up pulled apart. And so, because I tried to tell him, and he said, oh, no, that couldn't be.
That happens where you like something, an animal pulled apart and then just leave, and that happens down there.
So that was that, but
yeah, that's really scary, isn't it?
That's a different Bigfoot than the one that we had. That one down there seemed pretty ugly.
Yeah, brown.
One night, Sarah's father came home about midnight, and the dogs had been barking all night, all night, all night. It was about 2 in the morning. I got up, got out of bed, went out the back door, and took about 10 steps into the corral. And I heard this blood-curdling scream, yell, holler, sound, and it scared me so bad. And I thought, well, should I go ahead and let the dogs out or go back in the house? And so I let the dogs out. They ran past me, ran in the house, and laid down, and I shut the back door. And that was my encounters with that one down there the first time back when Sierra was in the first grade.
Well, I have heard actually that some species, or I guess Bigfoots are just like humans. There's aggressive ones and there's not aggressive ones.
Yeah, that's what I've met. One of the friends of Dr. Ketchum used to have a website, and She told me that there's more out there than people realize, and that they're all different, and they have bad ones, they have good ones, they have kind ones, they have all different types, you know, and they live all over the world.
Oh, absolutely. Like in New Zealand, we have our own one. He goes by numerous names. Moi Ho Man is one of the names. That's for the mountain range where they're found. Australia, where I'm living now, has the Yowie. They're all over the world, by different names. You know, there's so much that we humans are unaware of, actually, in our own reality.
Uh-huh. It's amazing.
Yeah, someone showed some films, I guess about a month ago, in an isolated part of here in Colorado where we live. And it was, where was it? It was something about Durango?
There's a railroad, smallest mile railroad route through the mountains. And somebody got a video of a Bigfoot walking around in a rock out there from their little train, the very first run they made to the, I guess it was a Toltec and Cumbres.
Yeah, there's no way you could get a car or walk or anything out there. Real isolated. And you could see him plain as day. He was brown. He was walking on the side of the mountain in the dirt. And he finally got to a bush and he stood behind it while the train went by.
Wow.
Yeah, looked like Chewbacca from Star Wars. It was all nice and clean. And he just kneels down in the rocks. And it's really kind of crazy.
Oh, I'd love to see that video.
I can find it. I'll send it to you along with my stuff. Because that's one of the most recent things we've had here in Colorado.
Oh, that would be great. I'll just add it to the website. So, Sierra, did you ever have any experiences of your own with this Bigfoot?
I had strange experiences that were car related, because like I'm into imports, and I know the import scene down there in Australia, New Zealand is really cool. So you can give a shout out to everybody down there. But I've always been into stuff since Hawaii. And weird stuff, he would leave fingerprints on my Toyota, and they weren't my fingerprints. And then there was another, I also had other weird experiences that happened, you know, separately from mom. But the ones that stand out to me are the car ones. There's also one where it looked like someone had walked up to the edge of the door trim by the window, and they scraped it with their fingernail. And they chipped paint all the way down to the metal. And nobody would do that. It's like he walked up, did his fingernail. And then one time I was in the house, asleep in the back room, and he put his face against the window and snorted like a horse. And I thought, oh my God. And I just covered up my eye. That scared me, because I knew it wasn't a horse breathing next to my window.
Oh, wow. So you didn't look to see?
Oh God, no, it scared the hell out of me. Then I was using the bathroom one time, standing, you know, above the toilet and looking out the window, and he growled as I was, yeah, you know, just
like Sierra as much as he liked
to see. It wasn't the fun times.
Oh, so I wonder if he felt more threatened by you because you're male.
We always assumed that was the case.
Yeah, yeah. And
in time, he didn't do nothing to us. He just did his own thing. But the car thing, you know, I found it kind of curious. He was always messing around with cars. Be real scary though, because you'd feel him out there at like 1 a.m. and like you'd be too afraid to do anything or work on anything.
Quit going out.
We'd go out at night because it would be just too scary. Even less when the weather's nice, it's not 100 degrees, you know, at night, and you can kind of do stuff, but I do have to stay inside. It'd be scary.
Wow. Like
night.
Yeah. You know? Sometimes he'd just hit the house or throw stuff. One time there was a bottle on top of the house, and I accused my neighbors of throwing a bottle up there, and then I apologized because I knew it was him that did it, you know.
Right. Right.
Weird stuff like that, you know, the weird stuff. Just even bigger, somebody wasn't at first.
One night, let's see what happened. We had another dog and name was Puppy, and she would run away. She'd bark and run towards him and then run away. And so one night she was running in the front, and I told Kiara, I said, now when I open the door, take that light and shine it across the road, because there was big bales of hay, big giant round bales of hay over there. And I said, I think Bigfoot's over there. And because she'd run and charge up to the gate that way and then turn around and run under the house. So I knew she was scared.
Fine.
So sure enough, we opened the door and Sierra picked up the light and he shined it across the street. And there he was. And half of his head was looking above the big bale of hay. and his eyes reflected yellow, and he kind of just slowly went down. He was trying to always look in our front door because it was a glass door, had a frame in it.
Right.
So,
yeah, I walked, like, I opened the front door, walked straight out the sidewalk, and turned the light on. And there was hay bales, farm hay bales stacked against it. And I just lit the light up right there, and there he was looking like this, and he just went down under the hay bale. And he had a gray face. He was real dingy, like dirty white hair. And I thought, oh, my God, see that?
Oh, my God.
Head was wrinkled, and his eyes were yellow. And he just, as soon as I turned the light on, he was looking and just did that. And I was just like, that just did not.
I can imagine you must have had like part of you is seeing what you're seeing, but hard to accept it because it's outside of what we perceive as reality. Yeah.
I felt sorry for him because he lived at the edge of our reality. Mm. You know, he would come out. He would come out at sunset, and he would go back in at sun up in the morning. And one time a friend came over from Hawaii, and we went hiking over towards the area where we knew this Bigfoot either lived or hung out.
Right.
Every day we would hear him over there. So we went down around, went all around, and we found these Bigfoot prints and all. Then we were walking over in that same area, and there was this strange mound of dirt and like a pyramid or triangle shape and a big square. It looked perfect. And I thought, look at that. That's a weird thing. And then I looked down and I saw all these scats. There must have been 15 piles of scats. And I said, oh, I thought, Chris, we better get out of here. I think this is his bathroom. And they go, it was a big berm there. And apparently they would go in this berm that was all built up with trees and dirt and real high. It was about 15 feet high. It was real big. And they'd come out and I figured they'd come use a bathroom and go back in.
Right. Right. So they're very, obviously very intelligent creatures. And in all of this time, you continued to leave food out for him.
Yeah. Sometimes I didn't have a lot, and I'd make peanut butter and jelly sandwiches or just whatever I had.
Yeah.
And we have fire ants down there. And
right.
I would wrap the sandwich up in a baggie, and I had a flower pot. I'd turn it upside down and put the sandwich in the baggie on top of the flower pot, and then I sometimes cover it with another flower pot, try to keep the ants out. And he would come and eat that sandwich. Sometimes he would just eat, was it the peanut butter or the jelly? He would either eat one of them and leave the other.
Yeah, you see, one piece, one side, leave the other.
And
tear the baggie perfect. Like, yeah. He'd slice it with his fingernail, Ziploc bag, and pull the sandwich out. You can see where.
Wow.
And no animal could
and
do
he'd
it like
stand
that.
There and eat it. They wouldn't be like an animal because animals are coyote or wolf or whatever, fox would take it and run away.
Right.
They always steal their food and run away and then eat it. But he would stand there, and people ask me, well, you should have got a picture. All those years, you should have got a picture. And I was hounded by that. But I didn't walk around with a camera around my neck.
Right, of course.
And unless you're a professional photographer and you have a camera around your neck 24/7, you're going to miss that perfect shot.
Oh,
and he'd get mad if I had a camera.
The sound, we were so far away in the woods, you could just videotape countryside, but you didn't sound.
Yeah, right.
They were just beyond the tree line. And so and at night when he would come, it was so dark down there. You never could even with night vision on the camera. It was just, he never could see hardly anything.
One night I sat there and looked out a crack in the back room where I had put some food, and I waited all night, and then he never showed up. And it's like they're just smart.
But see, lighting is dirty. Remember he pulled a light bulb out.
Really?
Because it's hot. It was a hot incandescent, or, you know, a hot one if you touched it, and he just popped it right up. And so you can see where somebody's grabbed it.
Threw it on the ground.
You know, and busted it loose.
Unplugged the computers, unplugged the lights.
Unplugged the little tablets that I had going. They would just be simply unplugged. So they weren't recording no more.
They were smart.
Smart enough to do a little.
Very intelligent. Well, I would say, you know, going back to what you said, Emily, that, well, he is telepathic because he was able to project thoughts to you. So he certainly could pick up your intent.
I guess so, yeah.
And
yeah.
Fear, too.
That's like, probably why he hung around so much, because he knew we weren't going to hurt him.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Fear, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you knew something was going on. Yeah, this would be like 1:30 in the morning.
I don't know why he projected that feeling of fear, because he'd never tried to hurt it.
Well, it's maybe, have you ever thought that perhaps he actually wasn't so much projecting fear as it was his energies are so different to ours that we perceive it that way?
So it's so intense. It was so intense, you feel the energy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was definitely that. No. Mm-hmm. The intense, it's like intense fear.
Well, I could understand that. He's this unknown. He could harm you if he wanted to. But the fact that he chose not to, and that you had this interaction over this whole period of time, tells me that he had some sort of affection for you, and you weren't just a source of food or a source of curiosity. He actually exposed himself to you.
Yeah, something, yeah, exactly. He actually cared. That's what it was sad, you know, to leave the place.
I always said, I sure wish I could see the Bigfoot riding down the road in front of the house on a tractor, but, you know, that could never happen. But
never know.
There has been a lot of talk about around Bigfoot sightings. There's often UFO sightings. And UFO experiences, has this been your case?
Well, from time and time again, that seems to be the case here and other sightings. There is some correlation to that. And I've had a story, a guy up here told me that he's seen one go through a portal. And then there was UFOs around over the woods around the same time. And that's just a simple story that he said. And that was up at, around Boulder, about Gold Country.
So the experiences ended because you moved.
Yeah, I've only seen up here. We went outside a town up here where we live in Colorado, and I saw another scab that sure looked like the stuff we saw down there, and I don't see us there. And there's been talk in this town. There's a lot of Bigfoot people. I'm not involved with it or know them, but there's this family that has all those cutouts of the Bigfoot in their yard, you know.
Right.
Father, I mean the male and the female and the kid. That
so I've heard stories here. There's a like a ridge you can go out and stand on this ridge and look down, and several 100 feet down on this green farmland, and it's real small farmland here in this small city. I mean, they say you can see a family of them walking around down there.
Wow.
Private property. You have to go on the private property to get on a ridge to see them.
Right.
So, really wild stories around me.
Yeah, they're here. I just don't really care about getting involved again.
Well, yeah, of course.
Times when it was depressing down there.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to leave, and, you know, I got tired of it because I knew he was by my window every night. And I don't know, it's just strange.
Yeah, I guess in some respects, it feels to me like you felt like a bit of a prisoner in your home at night.
Kind of,
yeah. When we first moved there, we didn't have any curtains or anything on our windows because we were
in the country.
Yeah, and I hadn't gotten it together. And I got a lot of headaches down there. I get migraines. I'm taking a lot of hot baths. And apparently he had been watching me bathe because I put a curtain up on the window, and boy, he growled like a monster.
It's the same window that he growled at me at. It's the same.
The German Shepherd, she went, woof, woof.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. A peeping Tom Bigfoot.
You know, it's weird. You're just living life, you know, like anybody else. Go to the grocery store, grab groceries, come home. And then when you get out of the car, you hear all these screams and monsters. You're like, oh, let's go in. You know, it's a weird, kind of a weird mix of normal life.
Apparently, they've been there in that area because I talked to this guy that had a store in a town down there about, I guess, what, 15, 10 miles from us. And he said, yeah, my grandfather lived over there by when I was a little boy. I used to go over there and I'd ride my bicycle down that cemetery road, and it was this road real sandy, you know?
Right.
And he said, one day I was riding my bicycle and I looked down and there was a giant footprints on the side of in the sand. Next thing he said, I turned my bike around and I got out of there. And I'm sure it was, you know, that's why they call them Bigfoot.
Yeah, and they are pretty massive from what I've seen photos of.
Have you ever had armor?
No, I can't say I have, but a close friend of mine has. And actually, her story is recorded in one of my podcast episodes. I think it's in the Moiho Man episode in my first season, her encounter along the Whanganui River.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll find the link for you and send it to you so you can listen to her experience. But it tracked them along the riverbank. It's just quite an isolated area there.
That's how they are down there. There's I had a friend who lived in Chesapeake Bay, and they moved down there next to where I was. And one of them was a follower of the creek and was throwing rocks at them. They were having to haul their canoe. It was low water in the river. I don't know what they were doing up there. It was pretty treacherous. And then they would get so far down, and then a rock would go in the water. A real big one, you know. And then they'd follow some more and throw rocks at them. And they're like, well, we better get out of here.
Damn.
Down there. And the same type of things were happening on Natchez River.
Yeah.
Down there. All through there. Yeah. I mean, you see the maps of the Bigfoot sightings, and it's just concentrated there.
So many trees, you know. Like,
right.
And there's so much for them to eat down there because there's wild persimmons and berries, and people have fruit trees and gardens and stuff, you know.
Yeah. So do you think, well, the vegetarian, do they eat meat?
They eat meat.
Right.
And I think part of their main diet is coyote.
Oh, interesting.
Because, yeah, at night, and every night about sunset, right after sunset, you'd hear the coyote yapping in the woods. And then you'd hear a different sound that was kind of like a coyote, but I think it was him mocking them. And then it felt like he would kill one because instantly they would stop and it would be instant quiet.
Right.
And some of his scats would be full of hair.
Oh, like interesting. Hair. Right. Oh, that makes sense. So what made you decide to go public with your experiences? How did that come about?
Well, we were on Art Bell's show two or three times. I don't know. But anyway.
I loved Art Bell.
I'm a radio buff, and I always listen to Art Bell and the Coast to Coast. And I don't know. I got to be friends with, after we had those encounters, you know, I thought, well, maybe people need to know the truth about some of our experiences, because people that live in cities that don't get to go out to the country are very much or live there don't really know. And that's why there's so many people that doubt it, because it's more than they can imagine.
Mm.
And a lot of these people that are out there trying to find this stuff, you can tell they've never had an encounter with one because it just doesn't click right.
Right.
Things they say, you know, and they, I don't know, it's just one of those deals. So because we had a 10-year experience with one, they contacted us. They found out about it through Art Bell, I think. He told Sierra and I that we were some of his favorite guests. We were
otherwise.
And that's how I started, because I wanted to tell people our experience is not all bad, you know.
Mm,
there's some people that just want to kill one.
Yeah.
That's all they want to do. That's why I didn't tell them my address or my name when we were on Art Bell.
I love Art Bell. I thought he was the most amazing host, and I try to emulate the way he would talk with his guests, because he just brought out so much out of his guests.
It was easy to listen to because you didn't get bored. And his guests are always right on, and so was he. And he didn't have a bunch of people up there just running their mouths saying nothing.
Yeah. So thank you both so much. I really appreciate you sharing your story. And
I have a book And
do you?
But it's not published yet. I'm trying to get it right now done. And when I get the money, I'm going to have it hardcover made and have it put in print. But it's about the 10 years of the nightly experience. It's called Emily's, let's see, what is
Bigger
it?
In backyard.
Elaine's Bigfoot in Backyard, I think is the name of it.
Oh, that'll be cool. Have you approached publishers or are you going to self-publish?
Well, I was going to self-publish for now because the publishing companies, they wanted it badly, but they wanted also $4,000.
Oh, what? To publish your book?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know how I can get it published?
I'm sorry, I don't. I wish I did. Otherwise, I'd help you out.
Well, if you find any way I can
get it. The cheapest I've found for to publish a book in America here is $5,000.
Well, if you ever get it done, and if you like, I'll do an audio recording of it for you so you can have it as an audio book for people.
That'd be cool because I don't have that set up.
I'd be happy to do that for you. Thank you very much for being with us today, Emily and Sierra. It's been a really, really interesting chat. Now, if people want to get in touch with you and you want to hear from people, how can they contact you? Are you on social media?
We've got it. Things, son.
Well, we've got on Facebook, we've got Bigfoot in Backyard Facebook, and it's a public group. And we're both in it, and so if somebody wants to join the Bigfoot in Backyard Facebook group, and I can send you a link.
Oh, that's all right. I actually have that link, and for my listeners.
That's about all I've got really going. I haven't made a website or nothing. I was going to eventually maybe about the book.
Probably a good idea when you get ready to publish that you have a website that people can buy it from. Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, little things that I've never done before. So, yes, we're kind of
getting into it, yeah. Really.
Well, it's a lot of work, but you know, when you publish your book, it pays to have that so people can see it and purchase it from there from you.
And they know you're legit.
Yeah, absolutely. So for my listeners, if you didn't get the name of their Facebook group, don't worry. There will be a link to it on this episode's page on the podcast website, www.walkingtheshadowlands.com. So if you go there, you can check out their Facebook group. You can also listen to the audio recordings that Emily and Sierra sent us, and you can contact them through their Facebook group. So once again, Emily and Sierra, thank you so very much for your time.
I enjoyed it.
And good on you to all your guests. And
we'll keep in touch. And you do the same.
Absolutely. I'd like to thank my guests, Emily and Sierra Nesvedomi, for taking the time to share their experiences with us all. We didn't have as much time to chat as I normally do with my guests due to some pressing family issues on my part, so I was unable to go too deeply into some of the areas of our conversation as I would have wanted to, for example, to explore the connection between UFO sightings and Bigfoot activity. Also, other paranormal experiences that they had experienced over this period of time. I personally tend to feel there's a connection with all three areas, so hopefully I'll be able to chat again at some time with this lovely family and get a bit more information from them, if you all are interested. But it's been an interesting conversation regardless, and I can't begin to imagine how they must have felt during the 10 years that they experienced this ongoing contact with these creatures. I've enjoyed their company and conversation very much, and hopefully you have also. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with others and leave our podcast a review. Your feedback helps me to bring more thought-provoking content to you. If you have any questions, if you think you might be an interesting guest, then drop me a line at shadowlands@myyahoo.com or check us or send me an email through the podcast website, www.walkingtheshadowlands.com. As I mentioned earlier, please consider becoming a supporter and helping me with the running costs of keeping this podcast on the air. You can buy me a coffee at www.buymeacoffee.com/walkingthe shadowlands or become a monthly supporter. Any help, big or small, to keep our podcast up and running is really appreciated. Don't forget to subscribe and share this episode with friends so you don't miss out on any episode. Follow for teasers of our upcoming shows on most social media platforms. Our Facebook page, WT Shadowlands. Our Instagram feed, Walking the Shadowlands. TikTok, under walking_the_shadowlands. Also, we have a YouTube channel under Walking the Shadowlands as well. This podcast is available on all free podcasting platforms. Also, if you have Alexa, just say, open Walking the Shadowlands and Alexa will play our latest episode for you. If you don't have a smartphone, don't worry. You can still listen to the episodes from the podcast website, www.walkingintheshadowlands.com. For those hearing impaired, there's a full written transcript of each episode on the website, so you don't miss out either. Until our next episode, keep wondering, keep questioning, keep your curiosity alive. This is Marianne, bidding you farewell from the Shadowlands. Thanks for listening to this episode. Ka kite.